for people to write things down on.
Okay, if you'd like to submit a question, there's been some questions that were already submitted, which maybe you can start with.
That's right.
But if you have a question that you'd like, there's no guarantee it'll get included in the mix, but you can venture. So if you have one to submit, Elena's got paper for you, so raise your hand if you'd like.
There you go.
Let's just walk through and hand them. Three people raise their hands, so we have some level of anonymity. Mm-hmm. Hey, I wanted to know about this. I got a question.
Yeah.
If you do anonymously, you can get away with more.
Right. Instead of having
you can go deeper.
I'll send you the microphone. So
this is our problem. Can I ask you the question?
Question I had for Bob that I think he's going to touch on was he's given us some practical rules on how to fight fair.
How to fight fair.
Or just really kind of referee rules related to what he's covered here. So he may throw one or two of those out this morning. So.
All right. While you're thinking of those, let's see.
Yeah, and then hand them back to Elena after you're done. Just raise your hand and she'll bring them.
Yeah, just throw your hand up and hold in your paper and she'll come get it from you.
So you got to move down here like for a month?
to be the counselor in between.
Are you going to everybody's house? Free dinner.
Yeah. All right, let me get. I'm going to start with a couple of the questions that have already been turned in. One question says, should one seek out discipleship on a one-to-one basis or seek it together as a couple? If together, is that something we should shoot for or do on a regular basis? Talking about discipleship. You want to respond?
Usually how we do this is we both answer the same question, so we get a little bit different perspective, but I'd say it's on an individual basis. You guys as a couple need to decide what will work for you. A lot of times people do individual discipleship, but I think whatever you do individually, you need to communicate to your spouse what's going on, what you're going through, what's being discipled in you, how, and ask for their input into it. If it truly discipleship means you're learning to grow, you're growing, you're being disciplined in areas. So I would say make it a together thing, whether you actually go to discipleship together or whether you go individually.
That's a good response. I did a wedding in Bulgaria for a pastor's daughter. And one of the traditions, and Bulgaria's full of traditions, very old culture, as you might know. Beautiful people. Bride walks in, groom's already at the front, very similar to what we do in our weddings. But then up on the platform, they'll have a kind of a kings and queens chairs, these big high back things. And they put them right here in the front center, and they each sit down in those facing the auditorium. And then we had a group of about 8 or 9 other ministers, friends of the pastor, and other elders, leaders in the church who came and would stand before them and speak some prophetic words, some words of affirmation, some prayers, just giving a prayer over them. Really a beautiful thing. But the thing I like the most, they don't have a best man and a best a maid of honor in the Bulgarian wedding. They have a best couple. And so the couple that would stand with them, the guy stands before or beside the groom, his wife stands beside the bride, and they have a responsibility that for the first 2 years of the married life, any problems they have to come back to this couple. That's their go-to people. So that's already established, that kind of not so heavy as a discipleship kind of thing, but that's already established. They have somebody who's already down the road further than them. They can come back and can help them process, not necessarily having all the answers, but help them process from a third party, hopefully more objective viewpoint. And that's one of my takeaways from a Bulgarian wedding that I think is just awesome. When you do an individual discipleship, many times when couples come to us with problems, we separate them and we work with them separately. Why? Because their issues are separately. And they have to have a measure of individual healing before they can come together and hopefully have a healthy marriage. So even in the individual discipleship that she's talking about, at some point she said, how to have good communication on what's going on in the other arena. You know, that's a must. A debrief time of what's God, well, this week we are looking at this, studying this, thinking about this, I'm working on this. This is, you know, those kind of communications really, really help you. We were talking about at the break about, she made a statement, well, this is not just so much about conflict resolution as it is about increasing your intimacy, increasing your understanding of the other person. I think that's very right, very true. And at some point in your relationship, as God grows you, you have to share or need to share whatever that new growth is with that other person so you grow together. When he talks about being unequally yoked, he's not talking about just believers and unbelievers. He is talking about people that are going at two different paces, going in two different directions, people that aren't on the same page, et cetera, et cetera. How many of you realize that can create some unequally yoking? The whole idea of a yoke, you think of the yoke that's on the oxen, the yoke keeps them in the same direction at the same pace. So your intimacy, as your intimacy with God increases, as your walk with Christ increases, you need to be able to share those and communicate those and encourage each other and build up each other in those areas. So whether individual discipleship or whoever wrote that question down or couples, both valid. I think both are needed. I really like the idea of a go-to couple, a mentor, mentee, an older couple that's been down the road, not just a couple that got married 1 year before you, but guys that have been on down the road a bit and can they're not the guys you go out with every Friday night. You know, hopefully it's not every Friday night that you have to meet with them, but, you know, but it's a couple that you can go to when you're struggling. And you know that then they'll have conversations. If your wife's going to their wife and you're going to the husband, and they'll have conversations and bring back a on the same page kind of perspective to you. Some thoughts. Really good one. All right. This number two on this was after we've been married 46 years. Knew each other 4 years before that. So, you know, in our relationship, we're 50 years old. But the question was, after 40 plus years of marriage, now what?
You have a few good years left, then you die. So take advantage of those few good years.
Don't leave any gas in the tank.
No,
man. Run
no,
it out.
No. Or money in the wallet. Just enjoy it. No, seriously. You know, there's ages and stages in life. And yeah. We're at the stage where our grandkids are actually all taller than us, you know? I mean, they're grown. So at that stage, they're much more involved in their lives and their own things. So we're not as involved. They love us. We're very connected, but not as involved. So we have a whole lot more free time. Both of our parents are gone. We've gone through all that. We have free time. So one of the things, or several of the things that we've done, is we've just decided to do some different things. We got scooters. And we scoot all over
the
place.
They're little bitty Harleys.
No,
not really.
They're actually, you know, they have to be big because we're not that little, you know. So they're big scooters. They could freeway if we want, but we don't do that. We go to wineries. We go to eat. We go through the dairies and the berries and all the things.
Hillsides and the mountains.
So, then we have friends that have joined us, and I've got a girls group that we scooter when the boys aren't there, and we just have a great time. But it's something so different from anything we've done. And I think that that's very important, is to find some new things. Do something new. Do something different. We work harder together on our eating and our exercise. We're not too strict on it, but it's very important. That stage in life, 40 years, you know, you have to take care of the bods. So do as much as you can to take care of them as well as you can for each other and for yourself and for your kids and your grandkids and all that. But it's important. So I'd say after 40, you need to be on some kind of exercise,
health, nutrition,
all those things, regular checkups. That's important. And I think sometimes before 40 years, you don't think about it. You don't have time. Your priorities are all the other kids, getting them all the braces and all the things, and you just don't do it. But you really have to do it at this stage, because it's, you don't get younger. The wrinkles don't get less, you know. It's just, right. It's different. So it's very important to do that and to prioritize it. So we're making it a priority, and we roughly keep each other accountable. We work hard at mm-hmm. it, you know, sometimes with a little bit of prodding, but it's something that's important. So I think that those are the two things, is really take care of your health and prioritize that, and then do some different things. Vacation, and plan together some things you want to do together. And I know that we sat down and said, you know, you look at it, we're getting close to 70. He'll be 69 in August, the first
Thanks,
of August.
Thanks, throw me under the bus.
Yeah, well, I'm following right after him. So we're getting to 70. We're hitting that 70. So we got 70 to 80 when you think in those 10-year things. We got from 70 to 80. What do we want to do with those years? Because, you know, life is, you don't have any guarantees. And after 80, it can be a slippery slope, you know. So what do you want to do for the next 10 years? So we just took a trip to Africa, South Africa. That was one of the things I really wanted to do, go on safari. And we just bit the bullet, spent the money, did it, and had a blast. It was one of the most wonderful things. Well, where else do we want to go? What else do we want to do? So we're trying to prioritize those and fit some fun things in. We actually went with a couple that was the best man at our wedding. We've known him over 50 years. I was a teenager when I met him. So we had the best time. So I'm saying, look forward to some things that are about you. And you need to do that anyway, whether 40 or years or not. I mean, you really need to do that as couples. But it's something that's you really need to look at and really do, that gives you some excitement, some things to look forward to.
I can't beat that. Let me re-summarize. Where you develop intimacy is through doing new things. You want intimacy with God? When's the last time you did something for the first time in your relationship with God, in your worship of God? Mm-hmm. So learn how to do new things. Learn how to do new things. Guys, learn how to do new things.
No. Another thing we have, too, that helps is we have a hot tub. So we spend time in the hot tub regularly because we can be at home. That's our time to just be together, to talk, to pray, to do whatever we want. It's or relax, whatever we want to do. So just do something fun. Think outside the box. Do something different.
Understand the stage of life you're in. That's a good conversation for each of you to have. What stage of life are we in? Some of you have children. Some of you are quickly becoming without children. You're already there. Some of you have grandchildren. Some of you just newlywed and you don't have any children, you're young. Okay, understand your season of life so you can get a better throttle on what you need to be doing or what you want to be doing during that season. Don't try to be a grandparent when you're 20 years old. You don't have the goods. I believe there's specific things God has relegated for us grandparents to impart into our grandchildren. I believe there's things we can put into them that their parents can't put into them. I believe that's part of divine design, divine blueprint, as far as family is concerned. So understand your season. Learn how to develop your intimacy. and find some things new that you can do together that you enjoy doing. You know, I've always been involved with sports, so, you know, I'd take off to the golf course or go hang out with the guys or go work out or go do whatever. That wasn't her thing. She tried picking up golf. We did it for about 6 months, and it just wasn't her thing. But she's gone avid over these little Vespas, these scooters. Now, these are not mopeds. These are scooters. These are highway-certified 90-mile-an-hour scooters. But they're not Harleys. They're not big bikes that can cruise at 90 miles an hour for 4 years. You know, they're a lot of fun, though. Just something different that we enjoy doing. We've begun to work out together. Sometimes she'll go up to a class, and I'll go downstairs to the weights. And she's talking about your physical body and being aware of those. That also has to do with your seasons. Your testosterone level, etc. It has to do with those. You know, say to you real quickly, as someone who's been around that arena for a long time, especially the athletic area, it's a whole lot easier to maintain than it is to regain. I was knocked out with the COVID thing and then traveling. And so I spent 9-10 months not in the gym and put on the proportionate weight. Now I'm having to fight to take it off. That is a heck of a lot harder than I thought. You know, it's easier to maintain it once you have it off where you want to be. So just be aware of those. Be aware of your season of life. Good conversation to have with your spouse. Hey, what season of life are we in? What does this look like? What do we have grace for during this season? Good thing. All right, number three. This question says, how do you honor someone when he or she is not honoring God?
Okay, I'll take that one. I think that you have to put yourself in God's shoes. Does God honor that person? Does God love that person? Does God care for that person? Does God know the things that that person has been through? And how would God treat that person? How would Jesus, how would the Holy Spirit treat that person? And you have to find that peace within you and that knowledge within you that God cares more for them than you can. And God can do a much better job of bringing them along than you can. And I think you need to honor God through them instead of just focusing on the fact that they're not maybe where you think they should be. And another thing that you have to really guard your heart over is being teachable. You know, you can be taught by anybody. You can be taught by anything if your heart is open and teachable. And I think that honoring them, God, you have given this person to me. I want to honor them, and I want you to teach me through them. Teach me patience. Teach me kindness. Teach me mercy. Teach me some things that I don't have down well. Because obviously, you're not joined for no reason. God causes all things to work together for good. So if you'll have that perspective, I think it'll go a long way. And I think you don't have to be in the way when you have that perspective.
Good, good. I like that. Honor is a very interesting word. Because it has to do with lifting someone up to your level. And there's certain ways that you honor, dominantly through your words and your attitude, and through your gifts and so forth. But you know, when you're the goodness of God leads us to, come on, repentance. So the goodness of God through you to that other person may take them to all sorts of places they would have never gone had it not been for you giving godly respect, if I can substitute that word for honor. As a teacher, those two words are different, but for general concepts, godly respect. Honor is a good word, but tends to get a little overused nowadays.
I think a sweet picture of that is we've got a little grandson named Canyon, and he has got such a tender, he's not little anymore, but when he was little, and he's still like this, even when he was young, he would do this. Because there are four in their family, and he's the third. And then there's other cousins. There's four other cousins. And we'd do a lot of things together as a family. And any time we were on walks, we were going someplace, we were at malls, we were at parks, wherever, Canyon was always doing this, going back to the last person. And he was always coming up beside the last person because he didn't want anybody to get left behind. And I think that that's a compassion and a heart we have to have with our spouse. Don't walk in front of them and go bursting down. Go back and say, come on, honey. You know, let's walk together. Whatever pace you're walking is great. That makes somebody feel loved, honored, and cared for.
Unless your plane's about to leave from the next gate, in which case.
My husband is still working on this example.
Open the door.
Where are you? Hurry up. It's all good.
All right, number four says, what are some ideas for keeping passion in your marriage during baby, toddler, young children years? Let me make one contribution and then let her make hers. One of the things that has been indispensable in our family, not just marriage, but in our family, has been keeping our dating life alive. And that includes my daughters when they become of age, and I did. Now my daughters are both now in their 40s. It includes our son when he became of that age. He would have his own night out where he got to choose and he'd go hang with dad or we'd go camping, or we'd go play golf, or we'd go do something he liked, but it's just dad time, son time. Especially in the marriage area that you have, that's why God gave you grandparents. So use and abuse them, and especially when you have babies, they can help take care of those so you have some nights alone where you can keep your romance alive. Otherwise, those kids will wear you out. They'll take every last piece of energy you have, every last dollar you have, but it is really helpful if you'll put that as a priority. Don't quit it, at least weekly, that you and your spouse have a time where y'all go. If you're going out to eat, it doesn't have to be expensive. If you want to go on a picnic, you go do some things together and share some things together, an evening. But an evening, don't always take the low road, an evening that will impart value to the other person.
Okay, I'm going to touch on a few things on this one. Number one is, at every stage of life, you're in different positions and you have different levels of energy and non-energy, and it can really affect the sex life. Matter of fact, we did this with a bunch of young couples and did the anonymous thing. Every single question was about sex.
The first 40 questions were sex
all
questions.
All sex questions. It was so funny. So we were just laughing, but we did it all. I mean, we said it all, we did it all. But the important, just little practical things about it is you're married and that's part of marriage. And when, especially when young mothers are having children, they're tired. And I mean, I know, we had three in a row and I was exhausted. But that doesn't mean you can't keep having sex. You've got to figure it out. You've got to find a way. And part of the dating and what Bob did was he got a babysitter for us for 4 or 5 hours every week. And that was a sacrifice because we didn't have a lot of money, but it was worth it. Where we had time, I wasn't tired, we knew it was going to happen, and that was, you know, we planned it. It was a thing.
Now, let me clarify, this was not 4 or 5 hours to have sex.
No.
We went out to eat. We'd worked out.
He had to romance me, you know. It was the whole package. It was the whole package, yeah. It was the whole package. And strategically, we had some time during the week, and then we knew, basically, Sunday afternoon, because afternoons, just for me, I was so tired in the morning and at night. The only time I really had a lot of things with the kids had to have quiet time. Whether they slept or not, I didn't care. If they screamed in their room, I didn't care. If they blew up their room, I didn't care. I had to have my nap. I had to have some time. So we knew that on Sunday afternoon, the kids knew we were taking naps, period. End of subject, leave mom and dad alone, they're taking a nap. So we had a time planned. Now, it wasn't as spontaneous as it was when we were first married, but we made a plan because it's important to not disconnect in those arenas. And then the next season of life, you have a different plan.
That's right.
But I think it's really important for you to discuss, man, how much do you want to do it? Woman, how much do you want to do it? Well, let's find some kind of medium, unless the man is like 20 times a day and this is one time a week. You know, we can't compromise. I'm sorry on that one. You're going to have to figure something else out on that one, you know, and just be at peace. Do what you got to do. But I'm saying discuss it. And then when you get older, you got a whole different thing going on. You know, you're older. You don't move quite as well as you used to. You can't stand upside down and do it. You know, you can't do all that. But you can float in the hot tub and do it upside down. But no, I'm just teasing. Let's try that, baby. No.
But do we have some other questions?
No, let me finish. Let me finish. The thing is, though, is you cannot go long periods of time without doing it and without having a discussion. It's just not healthy for your marriage. And if you have physical problems, that's, you know,
talk about them.
And try to get help if you can get help. And I know at some point, you know, our bodies are just going to wear out and they're too old and it's just going to, okay, we're done. I love you. Let me give you a kiss. We're done. You know, I know that's going to happen, but at least you can talk about it and you can go down gracefully. Does that make sense? Okay, but keep kindness, and that is part of marriage.
All right.
What was the question? I kind of got off the subject. Sorry.
Did you? Did y'all have some questions that you contributed that she can pick up your paper? If you have a paper, a question on a paper, hold your paper up and she'll come get it. There you go. Back here. Angie has three. So you know every other one, Anthony.
Y'all wrote your names on it, right?
No. Anybody on this side? Okay. All right. Thank you. All right. Okay. No, I had to read it to make sure I understand. How do you reconcile unmet or possibly unrealistic expectations towards your spouse? Now, I'm not sure if this is asking your spouse is not meeting your expectations or their expectations you're not meeting. But let's play with both of them for a second. One of the two primary ingredients of an offense are unfulfilled expectations. Unfulfilled expectations. You know, I if you are struggling, you have an expectation, I think it really serves you and serves the relationship for you to be able to have conversation on what you think that looks like. Find some other words than the word expectation. What do you think this might look like in our relationship? And you're identifying and defining your expectation. What do you think this might look like in the years ahead or now? You know, and what you're doing is processing and bringing clarity. The trouble with expectations is when they go unspoken and when they've not been processed. Yes, you could have a spoken, processed expectation still go unfulfilled. And then at that point, you have to cash in some relationship credits and say, hey, this is really hurting me. This isn't working for me. Can we revisit this and find another way to go at it? Do you want to add?
I would say, too, as you get into the expectation part, it would be wise to ask your spouse, I would like to know some of the things that you expect out of me, if you're going to use the word expectations. Mm-hmm. What are you hoping that I will do for you or be for you? But it kind of approach it from the sweet side instead of the sour side. Do you hear what I'm saying? So that you can begin a conversation on what part are you doing, what part, you know, because there are some things. You've got finances. How do we operate our finances? How do we operate mealtime? How do we operate laundry? There's things like that can be irritating. They can be totally irritating if they're not communicated and dealt with. And I think that, you know, maybe wives expect their husbands to put their towels on the towel bar and pull their underwear off the floor and put it in the basket. You know, some of those things that you just, and men expect a dinner when they get home, or, well, you know, some goofy things like that. So it's good for you to talk about those things and say, well, if just talk it out, but both sides, not just one side. Does that help?
Okay. This question says, is it vital to follow these steps that I presented to you in order? Can conflicts be resolved when you're not following these steps in order? Hey, if you got a way it's working for you guys, go with it. All I'm doing is presenting you some options and some tools in areas that might not be working for you. And don't be deceived to think that everything that you think is working is working. You know, just because there's silence in the camp doesn't mean the other party is always on the same page, is not in conflict. Okay, so yeah, you can follow it, whatever works for you guys. I'm just trying to load your gun and give you some, I keep using the word gun, that's probably not good.
I was thinking the same thing.
Let's find another word here. Trying to put tools in your belt to help you become a better conflict resolver, an ambassador of peace. So, yeah, there are a lot of ways to resolve conflicts. That's one. There's a paper that circulates around the marketplace arena, leadership and marketplace arenas, called Win-Win. You can go Google that online and pick it up. It has some great stuff in it, too, where it talks about a conflict doesn't have to result in a winner and a loser. It can result in two winners and how to do that. And it basically, without using Bible phrases, talks about putting value into people and don't come away from the conflict. Separate the person from the conflict and don't come away from the conflict devaluing the other person. All right, these two go together. This one's probably written by the husband. This one's by the wife. I don't know. I'm just joking. It says, can you touch on how our God views the roles of man and woman in a Christian marriage?
I'm going to go sit down on that one. He's going to have a sermon on that one. Go for it, babe. I submit.
Do you want the padded one? Get back up here. Gosh. you know, without spending a couple of hours in a series on divine blueprint and what those things look like and maybe don't look like. You know, I think it's hugely important for the husband and wife to become one. And if I was going to say roles, that's what I would say. God-honoring way. Become one. And do that, you have to give life to each other. Become one. Tree of life, not tree of right and wrong. Become one. Become one and be on the same page. Be like the other person? No, become one. My hand is one with my head and my feet. But boy, are they different. Different in function, different in look, different in desires, different in what they want to do, different in ability to feel or not feel. Become one. And you know, it is so interesting to me that when we pull out the Genesis passage of man becoming one, and it's carried over into Ephesians, and is spoken of Christ in the church, become one. Without trying to build a series on it, I think that would be the primary focus I could give you. If you have a, as Danny Silk puts it, a culture of honor ruling your home, that's where you agree to always respect. If you're at a point where you can't respect and honor, then take a time out and go get yourself a breather so you can come back and become one. You know, the attitude of heart predicates all of this. Become one. The attitude of heart, the disposition of heart, determines your vocabulary. Become one. The reason people have conflicts unresolved is because of attitude of heart. Because in areas of their life they're not one, they are the one. You're looking inward rather than looking to fulfill the other person. Become one. So whatever your roles are, however you line them up, however you understand Scripture to so speak it. And by the way, you know, again, without doing those of you that are Bible students, go do some studies on words like head. Man is head of the woman, as Christ is head of the church. Do a study on the word head and see what you come up with. Probably not what you think it is. I'll bet that on you. So that would be my advice to you. What do you want to share?
Okay. I didn't know how.
You're back up, huh?
How long that was going to be. That's a big one. He's not going to do the messages. Just an example of becoming one, what he's talking about. You know, in the spirit, our spirits are one with Christ, and he is the head. So acknowledging that and really locking into that. But then emotionally and our soulishly, let's say that, becoming one means, first, it's mind, will, and emotions. Mind, we have the mind of Christ. And if both of us will get the mind of Christ, we will become one. Okay? The will of God. If we'll both decide that we're going to do the will of God in this situation, it's not his opinion or my opinion, but it's his, and we seek God for his will, then we become one. And then emotionally, and I was talking to one of y'all, I can't remember which one, back there, about this particular subject. I believe that as we mature in the Lord, that emotions actually become the character of God. So we operate by the character of God rather than by our emotions. So we're not tossed and turned by how we feel, but we actually have a solid joy, a solid peace, a solid hope. Those are the character that is built in us. And if we can have that as our foundation rather than the ups and downs, but actually we find joy, we find peace together, then we are walking as one. Does that make sense?
One of the questions that was related to that had to do with what happens when one person in the relationship fulfills their God-given design and is seeking God and hungry for God, and the other person is not, may not even be a believer, but doesn't pursue that role. Okay, what do you do? That's not easy, guys. That's one of the reasons he talks about the yoke issue in Scripture, because it's really hard when you have a passion of heart that takes you one direction and they have a passion of heart that takes them another direction, and the twain shall not meet. You know, at some point you're going to find it hard to walk together. How do you pursue common life goals when you don't have common life? Much less common goals. You know, but on the other hand, I would have to say to you, you know, that you serving the other person through Christ's likeness is a key to health and well-being in your relationships. At appropriate times, goals need to come up. What we should be doing, shouldn't be doing. At times, at your stage and season, you know, what do we want to do for this next season of life, and how are we going to walk that out? You'll find a way between the two of you that is amenable. That doesn't mean you're mean. It just means that you can, it's good enough for both of you. You know, Book of Acts seemed good to them, to us, and to the Holy Spirit. You may not have a whole lot, you may not walk down what you think is the letter of the Scriptures, the principles, have every principle in place. But you find a road of peace, a road of grace, and a road of mercy that you can walk these things out. But wait, that's not what the Bible says. Okay, do you want to be right, or do you want to give life? Are y'all okay with that? Okay. Yes, sir. Oh, he has a late question. Okay. Now, when you wait till the end and you bring it up, you know everybody's going to know who wrote this.
That's the last one.
He says, I don't care. Okay, how to recognize if you're being controlling? Okay. I have to say to you, controlling on one breath is one of the biggest abuses of relationships, but on the other breath, control gets a bad rap. Hey, part of the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, self-control. Oh, wait a minute. We don't ever hear that preached, do we? All you hear is the negatives of control. Listen, men and women, control is a fear-based response. It is the number one fear-based response. When people are afraid of something, they'll control. When your emotions of your past affect the behavior of the present, that pain of the past will find its first, biggest expression through anger. Its second biggest, largest expression comes through fear. Anger, I'm mad at what is happening or has happened, present and past. Fear says, I'm afraid it's going to happen again. And the number one defensive posture with fear is control. So I'd have to ask you, if you can discover what you're afraid of, then you'll know and you can learn how to break the control. Let me take the context out of marriage for a minute. Had a pastor friend call me from Holland, and he said, "Bob, I was involved with him handing off a church to a spiritual son. They were trading generations, handing off from one generation to the next. And about a year into it, he got some calls from some of his former elders, and they were complaining that this new pastor is super controlling. Now, that new pastor had been there for a long time. He was a Timothy to a Paul, to use that expression. He'd been in the church for 6 or 7, 8 years, and now he'd been an associate pastor. Now he's taking the lead role. And he said, "Man, they're really upset. What should we do?" And I said to him, "David, I'm going to be in Holland in about 3 or 4 weeks. Let's set up some times to sit down with your son, and let's find out what he is afraid of." David said, "Afraid of?" I said, "Yeah, if we can find out what he's afraid of, then we can break or release that control. Because control is a defensive response to fear. Fear of failure. Fear of rejection. Fear of not having, et cetera, et cetera." And even within a marriage context, when you have one person who's dominant in all the decisions, then you will have a level of control, and it's not always the guy's. And that needs to be worked on. That needs to be processed. Because you can't be a controller and be in faith. Mm-hmm. Did you get that? Ain't gonna happen. Those two don't go together. And what that control is designed by the enemy to do is to breach your faith, interrupt your faith, and he's doing it. Because God wants you to begin to trust him, to faith him, to believe him for that particular area that you're trying to control. In other words, your focus on God, God ain't real big. Problem's bigger than God. Now listen how I say this as a teacher. Your conscious trust connection with God. My conscious trust connection needs to increase. And you'll find the control decreasing. But when control is increased, then my conscious trust connection will diminish and even disconnect. Control can be an issue. It really can. It can be a difficult issue because it's not an expression of oneness. When you become one, he's not becoming like you, you're not becoming like him. Y'all together are becoming like, it's what Laura was talking about, like him. It's the triangular principle versus him and her. I hope that helps. Somebody sent a question, obviously, that is a little more therapeutic about anxious attachment. If that's you, talk to me privately about that. I mean, you're using words that are used in therapy, and talk to me privately about that, and I'll speak to it, rather than on this setting. I think we could share some things, but I don't want to deal with that on this level. Any other questions? Guys, we love y'all. Really enjoyed last night. I hope y'all make that a regular, at least a quarterly thing where you can go hang out and have fun. Wonderful of the church to provide the nursery. Honestly, we used to do that when I was pastoring, and we would use the singles. Well, we had a kajillion singles, so that was easy. you know, and they would come man the nursery and take kids out and play games and all sorts of stuff, movie nights, so that moms and dads, especially young married couples who weren't, who were, you know, fighting to feed the family and raise kids, had ways that they could go and have a meal and have some alone time for the evening. So it's really a good thing. It's a good investment, Paul, of time and money. I encourage you guys to continue with what you've started. And thank you to you ladies that so wonderfully served last night, to whoever cleaned up after us.
Yeah. Gosh.
Okay. Anything else? Anybody else? This is your time. I hope this has been helpful. Again, if you try to sit down and look at this page and you feel like you're getting OD'd on it, overdosed, take one or two or three things off the page and work on them for a couple of months and then come back. Take another one or two and see how you're doing. Don't you know, there's a lot of stuff there that presents a lot of different angles and so forth. There weren't a lot of super practical tools, although in the conflict resolution communication, I told you some things that you really need to hear, like, hey, don't interrupt. Let that person go from beginning to end. Have at least 15 to 30 seconds of silence afterwards to be sure they're through. You know, they may be pausing for a breath, so you jump down the throat and go after it, you know. Oh, here's my time, you know. No. When you're describing the problem, don't go for the solution. Listen. Write it out. Let them see what you're writing so you can do some things together. I see right here, I wonder, what does this mean? You know? Why? Because you're doing it in a spirit of love, in a spirit of Christ, and with honor and respect.
One little tidbit, too. Watch your body language while they're talking.
Yeah. Sure.
Because you can say a lot with your face and your position and all the things while they're trying to say something.
And if
that's an issue, then just practice the Catholic thing. Put a door between you. Let that one person talk through the door. Let them say all the things they need to say. Keep your mouth shut till they're done. You make your faces over there. They don't see them. And they just get to go ahead and get
that's
it out.
That's a great idea. I've never heard of that one.
Yeah, well, I just thought of it. Anyway.
And the other person say your Hail Marys and Our Fathers.
Well, and then say, tomorrow it's my turn to sit behind the door. And then just listen. And then
that's really
come
good.
Back and resolve.
I like
but
that.
Then the faces get, you know, out of the picture and all the stuff.
Yeah.
So
you eliminate that body language stuff.
We're going to try that at home for sure.
Oh,
Jesus. I'm trying that one.
Sweet baby Jesus.
It's happening.
Thank you guys for letting us be with you. And love you. Tomorrow morning we'll probably talk on another relationship issue because of what we're dealing with here. I'm probably going to talk to you on the most used tool that breaks relationships. It's a tool. And you don't know you have it, but you have it. But it's a real negative thing that divides more relationships than any other singular thing. So that's going to be what we chew on in the morning. Reverend, Doctor, His Holiness.